Our worries today include immediate personal experiences of hurt, say in betrayal. They include the financial anxieties of the week this week. They include the shades of untruth now shadowing portions of society, culture, and political leadership. They include concerns for viral infection and protection for the elderly and the impaired. And also, amid all these global matters, the globe, our Mother Earth itself, we have concern for her in which all these worries find their home. It has been quite a week. It may help this morning in earshot of the gospel to listen for voices of faith, today particularly women's voices of faith. With me over time, you, for instance, have found the voice of Mary Pfeiffer, one such, from Reviving Ophelia to Women Rowing North, and much in between across the decades. Last week, she offered a reminder of the wonder in snow. Think what we have missed in snow, for good and for ill, this winter. Come Sunday, it may be, a quiet way to reset our sense of faith in listening to Pfeiffer's Hope of Heaven, she wrote. All of my life, I have loved snow. When I was a girl in the 1950s, snow fell often in the long winters of western Nebraska. I remember one winter when, after the streets were plowed, mountains of snow 10 feet tall stood in the middle of the streets. As a young mother, my favorite days were snow days when our family could stay home and play board games. I would make soup and popcorn. I relished taking my children outside to do the things that I had done in the snow as a girl. I loved falling asleep with my family safe on a blizzardy night when the streets were impassable and a blanket of peace covered our town. Now, snow has become a profoundly spiritual experience. When it snows, I sit by my window and I watch it fall. I go deep into its purity and softness. Snow falls inside and outside of me. It settles my brain and calms my body. I hope death feels like watching the snow grow thicker and thicker. Doctors call dying of a morphine overdose being snowed. I would not mind that at all. I would like to disappear in a whiteout. Perhaps the quintessential woman's voice of faith in the New Testament is found in our gospel today, John 4. We have our troubles, for sure. Here she is, ready to help us. One lone woman at one old well is here to help us. In a region well-versed in religious difference and dispute, our Lord is pictured in John 4, cutting through religion. For Samaritan, simply substitute other, religious other. If Nicodemus reminds us that we are free, and he does, the Samaritan woman reminds us that we are responsible, and we are. Freedom gives birth to responsibility. Jesus leaves the familiarity of Judah. He crosses, on this memory, multiple lines. He crosses the geographical line. He crosses the gender line. He crosses the racial line. He crosses the status line. He crosses the religious line. Our woman spells it out. You a Jew, I a Samaritan. Jesus Christ is the Lord of life, not the Lord of religion. Jesus Christ is the Lord of life, not the Lord of religion. He calls us from religion to faith, out of false consciousness, into a whole new way of being. Spirit and truth, spirit and truth. Our lone woman knows her Samaritan religion, Samaria, Jacob, ancestor, marriage. She knows marriage better than Elizabeth Taylor. Holy Mountain, Messiah. She's not a Jew and she's not a Christian. But you can substitute for her religious vocabulary any number of similarly developed religious tongues. She knows religion. Jesus offers her faith. Jesus offers her the religion of unreligion. And the Lord offers us this Lord's Day the religion of unreligion. Remember Don Quixote, la razón de la sin razón a mi razón me enflaquece de tal manera. The reason of unreason, the religion of unreligion. Are we lovers anymore? The Jesus of the fourth gospel is not blended easily with his counterparts in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Rather than projecting our own needs for uniformity out onto these ancient, holy, mysterious, puzzling, and powerful writings, we first will want to listen to them, to listen. We need to let the Bible speak to us. Now, the Jesus of John 4 is a very different Jesus. He sees into others' minds. He knows things without being told. He divines the secrets hidden in the heart. He stands alone and in public view with a woman, a Samaritan woman, a troubled Samaritan woman. This Jesus is guided along in a lengthy, mystagogical conversation full of riddles and double entendres and hidden meanings and mysterious silences. He offers living water. In none of this does one find a single correspondence with the earlier three quests for Jesus in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John's is an entirely different Jesus. So, asked one bright student, which is the true one? Excellent question. And here is an answer. They all are. They all truly represent the actual historical experience of Jesus Christ crucified and risen, which various little communities in his fledgling church did have of him. All four are historically accurate. With accuracy, they describe the Jesus known in the actual lives of the communities of Mark, 40 years after Calvary, Matthew, 50 years after Calvary, Luke, 55 years after Calvary, and John, 60 years after Calvary. They give us grace and freedom to sense Jesus as they did, present among us, as he was present among them. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. A third woman's voice of faith, a close cousin to that of both Mary Pfeiffer and that of the Samaritan woman, is the voice of our Lenten conversation partner 2020, Santa Teresa of Avila. In the preparation for these sermons, one fine resource on which we rely these weeks is that of Rowan Williams, when he still had time to write of such things. Says Rowan Williams, Teresa of Avila is one of the most accessible and attractive of all the great writers in the Christian mystical tradition, but her very human attractiveness and the fascination of her unusual experiences of vision and rapture tend to obscure two salient facts about her. First, she was a woman reacting to a particularly difficult epoch in the history of the Spanish state and church. And second, she was an independent theological thinker. She found her life of prayer, we could say, in conversation, and therein within her consanguineous capacity for fellowship, for friendship. Muses Rowan Williams. Hence the importance of friendship. Simply to elevate virtue over honor can lead to a strongly individualist ethic marked by just as much paralyzing anxiety as the honor system. Joining a religious community is a commitment to equality, and so to reciprocal pastoral care, both nurture and criticism, both criticism and nurture. This is set out most fully in her first 15 chapters of The Way of Perfection. It is thus to expose oneself to the ordinary misunderstandings of the common life and to be able to live with these, not seeking constantly to defend and justify oneself. That is incompatible with the religious life. It is incompatible with the religious life to want always to be right. The soul understands that it is required to preoccupy itself with God, that it needs to focus on him so it can escape all sorts of danger. On the other hand, it finds it mustn't overlook a single point of worldly etiquette, because that might provide occasions of sin to people who think their honor hinges on these niceties. Further, she had to find her way to leadership as a woman in a man's world. Opines Rowan Williams. Teresa is in the uncomfortable position of having to advise men who, presumably, know a lot more than she does. The only way she can do it is to convince them through her humility and strength, saying, "His yoke is sweet, and it is important not to drag the soul, as they say, but to bring it along gently so that it will make better progress." And also through her own example in prayer. Here she is writing of prayer. "It used to please me enormously to think of my soul as a garden and imagine that the Lord was walking in it. I begged him to increase the fragrance of those little flowers of virtue that were, it seemed, just starting to bloom. I didn't want anything for myself and invited him to cut whichever blossoms he wanted, because I already knew that the plants would be better for pruning." The voice of faith in the life of Teresa of Avila brings back to us the centrality of prayer, the necessity of contemplation. You can hear in her book titles even the emphases on contemplation: way, wholeness, relationship, ecstasy, love, God. Teresa can teach us, can heal us, and can guide our own salvation. Our current cultural condition, driven by a mercantile capitalism largely unfettered by other potent restraints, including religious restraints, makes little space for, makes little time for contemplation. Yes, we have calls to wellness and stillness. Yes, there are apps for brief daily meditation. Yes, we dimly recognize that there probably is more to life than what is measured in contract, income, consumption, and schedule. But for the regular woman or man, for you or for me, lengthy contemplation and rigorous preparations for it are present largely by their absence. So the 16th century Spanish mystics, Santa Teresa of Avila central among them, with their poetic disciplines, are foreign to the main for us, and so they have something wonderful, mysterious, and deep to offer you. A few of us spent the year together as college juniors in Segovia, Spain, not far from Avila, now more than 40 years ago. Francisco Franco was still in power. The Guardia Civil kept order except when surprised by Basque militants. The Corrida de Toros far exceeded football in popularity. The country was quietly preparing to emerge from fascismo. The waiters had seen and served Ernest Hemingway, even if they had not read his book about their town, Por Quien Doblan Las Campanas, For Whom the Bell Tolls. And people, regular people, still read the poets, from Calderon to Machado and back. And the evening paseo, the walk through the village, was the heart of the day for all, large and small, short and tall, rich and poor and all. And the poetry, y mientras otros, and while others strive vainly for impermanent authority, let me lie in the shade of a tree singing. The year abroad can be the best part of college, as it was for us so long ago. There was, that is, there, a lived experience that was not allergic to contemplation. A fourth nearby woman's voice of faith can be found right here in the work of Marsh Chapel. As Dr. Jessica Chica has written in the recent daily Marsh Lenten devotions, Jesus reminds us that our physical need for water will always be a constant. We will become thirsty again. That thirst must continue to be quenched by access to clean water, a concern for the Samaritan woman who must make long treks to the well to secure the water she needs for daily living. Jesus offers her the living waters of the Spirit, seeing past her outsider status as a Samaritan woman, but instead as a person deserving the good news found in the grace of God. I wonder, with these four voices this morning in our ears, whether we might find the discipline, take the time to wander a bit in the wilderness of contemplation, to wander a bit in the forest's primeval of prayer. This might just be the Lent in which to do so. So lift up your hearts amid the changes, challenges, and uncertainties of our current moment. Please be mindful that we here have you in prayer and have a daily watchful interest in noting ways to be of ongoing service and support. We are with you, we are for you, and we carry a daily pastoral embrace of you. The verse from Philippians comes to mind. In all things, in prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, lift your needs to God. In that same spirit, you might, day by day, lift one particular person from our community or from your own personal community in quiet prayer. This Lenten sermon series, relying on Santa Teresa of Avila, as it happens, is centered just so on prayer. So now we have added dimension in our prayer lives, given the challenges of the day and the hour. Amen.